Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, June 10th, 2021. A few issues tonight. I'm going to be talking about water, and I'm going to be continuing the discussion I had last week about the comparison between electric and hydrogen cars. And this week, there's a little twist on that. I'm going to be including liquid natural gas. LNG, as it is called. We're shipping tremendous amounts of this to China right now, and if you've ever seen the ships that carry this, they look like an oil tanker, except there's three big, the ones I saw, they had three big, like, globes in the, you know, it looks like a fruit factory kind of floating in the water with muskmelons or sitting in them. But anyway, the major exporting place for this is down in Louisiana. As I understand it, it's off of New Orleans, out in the marsh, out in the Gulf of Mexico. And the boats have to park way out there. And then they have to take the natural gas, which is, I believe, like in gas form still. And it's coming in from all over the country. And it's going out into these boats. And then they pressurize it. And so when they pressurize it then becomes liquid. It becomes like propane in a tank. And it has slightly less power than liquid propane because the propane just burns hotter. It has more energy per unit of mass. At any rate, I'll be talking about that. And that's an interesting twist because it brings up some real big questions. There are a lot of people working on that technology now, on both hydrogen in the gaseous form. And then I'm going to throw in a little twist here as H2 nuclear. And that's something that I worked in back in the early 1980s, and it disappeared into the military-industrial complex, never to be seen again, of course. But anyway, I'll be talking about that. And that turns out to be the energy density, what they call specific energy, if you want to know the correct scientific term, is thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of times greater than chemical H2. So I'll be giving that, and then I'll be comparing it to lithium-ion batteries, propane, butane, gasoline, etc. But the interesting thing about gasoline is you don't have to pressurize it. And it turns out, and I mentioned this last week, that when you pressurize hydrogen, H2, or you pressurize natural gas, or you pressure anything that you pressurize, it could be butane, propane, etc. When you pressurize it, it takes a lot of energy for that first pressurization. And then what happens is then you have it up to pressure, you have it in pressurized tanks, and then if you move it from one tank to the other, it's like liquid form. It flows like gasoline under extreme high pressure, or any other liquid like water. Is like when you go get to your propane tank filled at the, you go to the guy who's got a great big tank there of propane, and you give him your little tank, or the great big tank of propane drives out to your house, if you got a propane tank behind your house, then you would, the truck would fill up your tank. But what he's really doing there, he's adding a little bit of pressure. There's a bit of a pump there, mainly to move the liquid, but it's mainly a liquid form, and it's all under very high pressure, about the better part of 1,000 times atmospheric pressure. Top pressure, or charging pressure, what they call it, if you have a hydrogen car, top pressure is about 880 bar. And a bar is about the same, it's a smidgen more than an atmosphere of pressure. So 880 bars is about 880 atmospheric pressures. And so that's pretty steep, and that's what it takes to pressurize and turn those into liquid form. First of all, a couple announcements, and this is for people who have the paid cast or education packages, etc. With the conversion to the new webpage, to the new WordPress webpage, of course, the thing that got left behind, the kid that got left behind, were the paid casts and other things, because there's about There's better than 5 gigabytes worth of information in the paid cast, which then got converted into the education packages. And in that conversion, the first thing we did was we moved all of the content over, including my radio shows, my 20 years worth of radio shows. So that was a big effort. And so now I think everything is up there for the education package, which is based on the paid cast, etc., and the books, the PDFs for the books, etc. And so that was a big, big job, which I did myself. I had the honor of doing that. I hired the work done for the web page, converting it to WordPress, etc. But at any rate, this was a long and difficult process because I had to do it in little pieces because too many times if you try and send a big piece, like a gigabyte at a time up to a server, something fails and it fails in the middle and you don't know where, so you got to start over. So you're just better off to take it in little chunks and put it there and then make sure that what you sent when it got there and test it out. So that's been done now. So by the time you're listening to this show, you should be able to go to the web page and download all of the things that you purchased, including the books, etc. There's one little glitch, and anyway, I'll be communicating with people relative to the DVD number 4. That's an exception because, unbeknownst to me, my provider changed the server that is held on. So everybody that's got a link to, and this goes to people that bought books, book packages, etc., the DVD number 4 is on a different server. So if you're missing that, email and go to the web page, go to the email address, email in and say, hey, I bought this package back when, give me a date so I can look it up, and then I'll send you the new link for the DVD number 4. That's the a space science lesson, etc. And so anyway, if you're one of those people that purchased one of those products, you should be able to get most of that product downloaded now. Okay. And there's an immense amount of material there. I mean, we're talking 5-6 gigabytes of lectures, photos, text. That's a lot of information. And by the way, I've stopped producing a lot of the material with my books, etc., because, by the way, if you get through all of that material, you will have basically a university-level course in astrophysics, astronomy, space science. And some, you'll know a lot more than anybody that ever worked for NASA, I'll tell you that. Okay, so thank you for your patience is another thing. And also, this past week I had some problems with the webpage. So if you tried to order in the last 7 days and got turned away for some reason, go back and you can order now. And I won't even try and explain all of the difficulties that happened in the last week, but everything is back to normal. And so it's there again. I'm involved in all of that. That's what I get to do. Some of my time is taking care of these, you know, maintaining things. By the way, regarding water filtration, and I announced this before, but I'm going to emphasize it again. I am still selling water filters, elements like the replacement filters for the gravity filter. I'm still selling those, and you can get them on my webpage, etc. And I've also got the, remember that there's no stainless steel housings at all available. Nobody's got them. I look around at other people's web pages, whether it's, I won't mention names, but other people sell gravity water filters with stainless steel housings. Nobody's got them. Nobody can get them. I can get them in large quantities, but I made a decision, a business decision, not to go that route. I could be literally the only person that has them. But here's the deal. First of all, I now am selling a package that includes a very nice stainless steel spigot. and you can buy the filter elements, and then you go out and you buy a plastic container. This is if you want an inexpensive water filter, and you can buy these for $4 or $5 a piece locally, from 2-3 gallons up to 5 gallons or even larger, and with a cover on them, food grade plastic. And then my instruction sheet, which is on the webpage, teaches you how to make your own, how to drill the holes, and you get the spigot and you get the filter elements and you make your own water filter. Okay. And but the other issue with stainless steel is that it's a lot of work. It's a lot of big expense for me to get them in and store them and all of that stuff. But here's the deal. I am really turning people away from having just a kitchen water filter. If you're in a cabin, if you're camping or you're traveling or something and you take your water filter, okay, now you got your water filter whenever you go someplace. But if you're in your house, the way the water situation is now in the United States, I'm just telling people, I really don't want to sell you a little kitchen water filter. I even sell the kitchen inline ones that you plug in with your faucet in the kitchen. Well, that's fine. But let me tell you something. The PFAS chemicals are in the water. They're everywhere. And I have a map. In fact, by the way, I have a pamphlet that I produced. It's 10 pages. You can go to the sales page, scroll down to the bottom for the water filter stuff, JMCC water filters. If you're on my homepage, just click on the JMCC water filters link, and it'll take you to the homepage or the sales page, and go down to the bottom, and you can get the pamphlet for free. Just put your email address in there, and we will send you free this 10-page pamphlet. But in there, there's a map of the United States, and it shows all of the places where PFAS, these are the famous forever chemicals that come from industrial, like firefighter foam, and from Teflon, and from industrial processes, from wood mills, from all kinds of industrial processes. And this stuff has gotten into the water table, and it's everywhere. Every major city and every minor city and every town just about in the United States has this stuff in the water. And it's very soluble in water, and so it resists water. And so anyway, it moves all around, so it's everywhere. So I'm telling people, forget about getting yourself a countertop water filter, or if you have one and you're looking at buying replacement filter elements, what I'm telling people is, hey, put your money into a whole house water filter. And I mean, I'm trying to do you a favor. If you're like, well, I don't want to spend that much money. Well, take your choice, because someday you're going to be putting a lot of money into a hospital someplace. And I'm serious. This is bad news stuff. I mean, we're talking immune system destruction. We're talking stunted growth in kids. We're talking moms that are prenatal and postnatal, giving it to their babies in the through their umbilical cord and then through the mother's milk, if they're not filtering this out of the water. And I mean, as far as older people, it's causing cancer. This is bad stuff, and it's everywhere in high concentrations. I just was talking to some people up in a little town in Maine. They have 150 times what is considered to be the safe level of toxicity in their water of PFAS chemicals. It's everywhere. It's out in the country. Or if you're not, you're going to have glyphosates. The water in the U.S. is some of the most polluted in the world, next to China. Okay, so anyway, the short story is, go to my webpage. I'm promoting the MR5 filter. It's now on sale. It comes with 5 filter elements, and those 5 filter elements are all the same. You have 5 because you need that many to get the flow rate. These have a 0.1 micron filter with the medium in there that takes out all the chemicals, including odors and gas, etc. Okay, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this show, and it sounds like maybe a commercial, but believe me, I'm helping you out. I have a filter that literally you cannot find anyplace else, and especially in the quantities. I've gone through great efforts to ramp up production to where I can have thousands of these units per week, per month, shipped out, and they're about half the price they were just 2 years ago. So anyway, okay, that's all I'm going to say. If you don't listen, if you don't do that, I can't help you. That's all I can tell you. Okay, so let's jump into this topic about comparison of automobiles. Automobiles, electric, so EVs, H2, which I talked about last week. I'm going to be talking some more about a little more technical level this week about the specific energy. That's the amount of energy per kilogram of these different types of fuel. And then, as I said, liquid natural gas, which is very high in energy, about a couple times. I'll wait till we get into the numbers here. But first of all, let me explain a scientific term here. It's called specific energy. And what it means is, like, let's take a pound of fuel, whether it's liquid hydrogen, liquid natural gas, or a lithium-ion battery that weighs 1 kilogram. How much energy can you store and recover from that unit, whether it's propane, butane, gasoline, hydrogen, electric car batteries, which would be the lithium? How much energy can you store in those and extract back out for useful work to move a car around? And it turns out that hydrogen tops them all. Hydrogen is really good. And, of course, this is not a scientific secret. That's why they used hydrogen in the first stage of the space shuttle, in the main boosters, you know, those big tanks. The space shuttle looked like a kind of pregnant guppy with these two solid fuel rockets by the side. And those solid fuel rockets had a mixture of sulfur, high sulfur content, rubber, aluminum. Those were the main ingredients, and sulfur. That's what the space shuttle solid boosters were primarily comprised of, because aluminum burns at a very high temperature, and the rubber and that mixture is what they use in the big solid fuel rockets, etc. Okay, but the liquid fuel was hydrogen. Why hydrogen? Because it has a very high specific energy. In other words, it produces the most amount of energy. It gets the gas the hottest. And then, of course, they had liquid oxygen. So they had liquid oxygen, liquid hydrogen together, and that produced the most the energy to lift the space shuttle off into outer space. Now, the old Saturn V rockets had kerosene as the main fuel in the lower stage. And when you got up into the upper stages, then you had the liquid oxygen, because it was better suited for outer space applications. And then in the third stage, also liquid oxygen, liquid hydrogen. But the Russians are using primarily kerosene. And you'll notice that the SpaceX rockets use a bit different chemical for their main propulsion in their rockets. But back to automobiles. Hydrogen has the highest specific energy, that is, the amount of recoverable energy per kilogram of all of the fuels that we're dealing with, except for hydrogen in the nuclear form. In other words, if you have a slow fusion process, then hydrogen used as a nuclear fuel just beats them all by 10,000 or 100,000 factor. So anyway, I'll be talking, if I have a little bit of time, at the end of that show, because that's what I personally worked on back in the early 1980s. And that technology got absconded with into the military-industrial complex and has never reappeared since. Okay, so anyway, the specific energy then is, as I said, you take a kilogram, which is, imagine a little container full of a kilogram of hydrogen, and it's under very high pressure to put it into a liquid form. Let me just give you another example of the use of hydrogen through historical use. That was in the World War II and pre-World War II Hindenburg-class airships, they were called. And what they did is helium was very expensive to get, but hydrogen was very easy to get. You produce it with electrolysis. You may have done this in a high school experiment in the chemistry lab, where you take a beaker of water, you take a battery, and you take two leads off the battery, and you put it down in the water with the leads coming up inside these two test tubes. And what happens is oxygen comes up into one test tube and hydrogen into the other test tube. And it fills them up. And you kind of got a little bomb sitting there, basically. But you're separating water into its two components, hydrogen and oxygen. So it's a fairly simple process. As I said last week, it's about 73% efficient. So you're taking electricity from some other source, and that's where, by the way, the wing generator comes in, is producing hydrogen. And that's a very viable option for reasons I gave last week. The biggest one is that you don't need these cables. If you've seen what's going on in Block Island up there, oh, those poor people, they're just getting jabbed and jolted and skewered by the power company up there because they put these five big, ugly three-blade wind turbines right off the island, supposedly to produce energy, but they've got to run that back to the mainland to be conditioned before they send it out on another cable to the island. But the cabling is not working because it keeps moving around with the currents and breaking the cable or smashing it or something. And now there's some kind of a blockage in the cable where they can't get a replacement cable through. Oh, it's just the biggest mess in the world. And these poor people are paying for all of this and not getting electricity out of these pieces of you-know-what. But anyway, the point is that if you have a wing generator out on the ocean producing hydrogen, then there's no cable. There's no tube that goes to shore because you just pressurize it right there. Then the big tanker truck comes along, tanker ship, comes alongside, fills up, and takes that to shore. And it's a very easy transition from gasoline infrastructure to hydrogen. And I think this is where the downfall of electric cars will be, and where hydrogen could win out in the end. Okay, because of these complications with delivering electricity from offshore sites. Okay, but now back to the idea of specific energy. I'm going to go down through these different chemicals and give you their specific energy, starting from the biggest, the highest one, which is hydrogen, H2. It's a chemical. All of these are chemical except for hydrogen nuclear, which I'll talk about in a minute. And so hydrogen chemical has a specific energy of about 120 to 142 megajoules per kilogram. Now, joules is a unit of energy. And so megajoules is a million joules. So it's a million joules per kilogram, per 1 kilogram weight of hydrogen. And remember that hydrogen is in liquid form, so it's pressurized. So after we get into this, I'm going to talk about how much energy it takes to pressurize it, and that's kind of an eye-opener too. Okay, now let's take liquid natural gas, which is up there. Of the other, what you might call fossil fuels, it is the highest. It has the highest specific energy, megajoules per kilogram. It's 53. So it's about a third of liquid hydrogen. And I thought it rather comical, the article where they were touting liquid natural gas as being so amazing, etc. They never even mentioned hydrogen in the whole article. Why? Because hydrogen is easier to get. Use electrolysis and use water. You don't have to drill. You don't have to, you know, it's hydrogen is much cleaner. Even though natural gas is clean burning, hydrogen is 100% clean burning. And so at any rate, liquid natural gas, 53 megajoules per kilogram. And as I said, H2, 142. So literally about three times as much stored energy in hydrogen as in natural gas in the liquid forms. Now let's look at propane. Propane is what you have out in your backyard. If you have a propane tank, the BS company comes out and fills it up. That's propane. And propane is a component of natural gas. If you have natural gas is made up of methane and propane and butane and a mixture of things. But anyway, propane is a little less at about 50 megajoules per kilogram. It's right there next to natural gas. And by the way, if you have a natural gas line running into your house and you compare that to propane, propane has more oomph to it. It has more energy. And that's because the natural gas coming into your house is low pressure. And that's why propane coming in at a higher pressure has more energy. Is just but in the liquid form, liquid natural gas has a bit more energy per kilogram than propane. Butane, another what you might call incorrectly fossil fuels, it comes from it's a hydrocarbon chain, is at 49, and gasoline, liquid gasoline, like you put in your automobile, is about 46. So they're all kind of neck and neck, natural gas, liquid natural gas, propane, butane, gasoline. And gasoline is about 46 megajoules per kilogram, but the other ones have to be pressurized. So how does that work? Now, if you do some calculations, it takes about 8 megajoule per kilogram to pressurize hydrogen, liquid natural gas, propane, butane, and it does not take any to pressurize gasoline. Gasoline is a liquid at room temperature and therefore does not have to be pressurized. So take away that 8 megajoules per kilogram from natural gas, which is 53. Now you're down to 45. You are truly a third of hydrogen. And take that away from propane, you're down to about 42 kilograms per megajoule. And so anyway, so in hydrogen, you're taking 8 megajoules away from 142. That's only 134. So you're still way up there. You're still way up there with liquid hydrogen. And so the people that were talking about natural gas as being the savior of the world were not subtracting off the energy that it takes. And where does that energy come from? That comes from electricity. That is an electrical pump. It's runoff electricity. And where do you get the electricity? Well, that's either from coal or burning some of that natural gas at about a 30% efficiency. And so, okay, let's say we take natural gas, we convert it to electricity at about a 30%, and that's because of the Carnot cycle. 70% of that energy goes off into the atmosphere as heat right now, and 30%. So you're dealing to get 8 megajoules of energy to pressurize that natural gas. It's costing you about 27 megajoules of energy to pressurize that, to get 8 megajoules of energy to pressurize that 1 kilogram of hydrogen. Whoa! Just a minute, boys and girls. They didn't talk about that in this whiz-bang, gee-whiz article. They didn't talk about the fact that of the 53 megajoules per kilogram of energy that you can get out of liquid natural gas, that just to pressurize it, it's going to take half of that amount of energy. So now you're down to overall liquid natural gas having about a 25 megajoule per kilogram package specific energy. Well, the same with propane. Well, the same with liquid hydrogen. But liquid hydrogen, it's not that big of a problem because you're dealing with 142 megajoules per kilogram to begin with. And so anyway, this is a huge thing and nobody's talking about this. I get so upset when I read these articles and they're just so misleading. Okay, so let me quick go through this again because I know some of you are not that scientifically oriented, and even if you're an engineer, you're probably going, wait a minute, whoosh, what happened here? And so I'm going to explain this again. We start out that if you have liquid natural gas or propane or butane, or in fact, liquid hydrogen in a container, and you have 1 kilogram of that energetic material, But here's another environmental issue, as long as I have it on my mind, is that to burn hydrogen, liquid natural gas, propane, butane, or gasoline, you need oxygen. Where does that oxygen come from? Doggone it, that's the same oxygen that you and I breathe out of the air, and that animals, you know, endangered species breathe, oxygen, and then they convert it to a carbon dioxide, and then plants use the carbon dioxide and convert it back to oxygen. But believe me, there's when you start having power plants consuming oxygen, there's not enough bushes and plants and trees and ferns in the Amazon jungle to convert all of that back to oxygen. So these are the issues. People talk about climate change. They're missing the boat on the big issues. We're burning oxygen. Hey, buddy, you breathe oxygen. And right now, I've made an estimate, there's probably half as much oxygen in the atmosphere today as there was at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, for which we have no measurements. Okay, but let me run through this little narration again regarding the pressurization of these gases, hydrogen, liquid natural gas, propane, butane, etc., and gasoline does not have this. So gasoline wins hands down as far as the most energetic liquid substance, or what you might, of this group of fuels. And before I do that, I'm going to talk about lithium-ion batteries. Now, lithium-ion has a megajoule per kilogram, or a specific energy of 0.5 megajoules per kilogram. That's 1/100th the amount. Actually, the people say that's about, yeah, it's literally about 1/100th of the amount of energy stored as liquid natural gas or propane. And it's about 1/300th the amount of energy stored in hydrogen. So right there, you're dealing with something that, you know, and of course, lithium is a material that you don't have to replenish. When you burn up hydrogen, you got to go out and get more and put it in a tank and bring it back and put it in the vehicle. Lithium, you just have to charge up. You just have to pump some electrons in it, and it's ready to go again. But something I did not mention last week, when you're talking about lithium-ion batteries in an automobile, hey, buddy, in about 5 years, within 3 to 5 years, if you're using your car regularly on a daily basis, you're going to have to take that puppy in and get a brand new battery. You don't think that's going to set you back 10 grand. I think they're about 7 now, some of the Tesla battery replacement. And I'm not real current on that, so somebody might have a little bit better figure on that. But we're talking major piece of change, whereas maybe you used to have to do that with an automobile where you'd have to have your engine redone. We're talking the same kind of money in a lithium-ion battery-powered car. But the amount of stored energy, and I don't foresee that going up by quantum leaps anywhere in the near future, and of course, hydrogen, liquid natural gas, propane, if you like. Remember, there are car fleets out there running on propane, on pressurized propane. And some of the big fleets, like they have pressurized propane as the main method of driving their fleet of automobiles and trucks around. And that's because there's another issue with propane and hydrogen, in that they are not solvents. Gasoline is a solvent. Diesel fuel is not a solvent. And so the issue with gasoline is every time that cylinder goes off, that gasoline washes the oil out of the cylinder. It cleans it, does a very nice job of cleaning it out. And that's why your car wears out very quickly with a gasoline engine. Hydrogen, liquid natural gas, propane do not do that. I've had generators, like electrical generators, that have run for decades, and sometimes just running continuously for weeks or months at a time off of propane, and they don't wear out. They just run forever because it's not leaching the oil out of the cylinder in that internal combustion engine. But the other thing is about all of these, the one thing they're not mentioning to you is that now you're running at about 30% efficiency. 30%. In other words, 70% of that heat energy that you're producing, 70% of that goes into the atmosphere. Which brings up another very interesting point here. And I'll get back to the explaining the numbers on pumping up in the pressurization of hydrogen in a minute. But the here's an invention that a guy did, and I only saw this once, and it really makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, you have your internal combustion engine. I don't care if you're dealing fuel, whether it's hydrogen, natural gas, propane, gasoline. I don't care what your fuel is. This could work with any of them. And here's the deal. You have to cool that engine down. Otherwise, it would just keep building up heat and building up heat. You have to cool that engine down. And that is done with a cooling system with water. And, of course, they use Prestone antifreeze or some other type of a chemical base for the cooling system in the automobile. But say you just used water, or in part of the cooling system, you had an independent cooling system that just used water, and you brought that water up in the engine, in the cooling system, right below the boiling point of water. That's the point at which it turns to steam. Okay? Now, every time the injector goes off and injects some gasoline into the cylinder, you inject some water also, some water that's right at the boiling point of water, turning it into steam. And so the fuel, the hydrogen or the carbon-based fuel, goes off, and part of that energy, but a very little bit, goes to convert that water into steam. Now you have, with a very little bit of extra energy, kind of like a spark plug, so to speak, you have the ability that steam now turns into expansive energy and gives you a tremendous amount of more power in your car. That is a viable engine, and I'm sure that the powers that be know this, the engineers that be, that work for the powers that be, know all of this, and that would be the ideal economical car, because now you're taking heat energy that's already in that internal combustion engine that's going off into the atmosphere because you're cooling it and you're running a fan over the engine and you have the cooling system going through the radiator, and all of that energy is going off into the atmosphere. But instead, take some of that energy, put it into water right up to the boiling point, inject it into the cylinder just as the gasoline or hydrogen or whatever else is being injected into the cylinder. And when that baby goes off, you're converting that water with just a little bit of more energy into steam, and boom, you know, you have a tremendous assist from the other type of fuel. But remember that all of these are running on the Carnot cycle. In other words, they generate heat, that moves the cylinder, etc., but it's about 30% efficient, so about 70% of this goes off as heat in the atmosphere, and that's something that the EV cars will beat them on, because the energy to charge up an electric car and then the dissipated energy when you're removing the energy from those batteries is less than in a Carnot cycle, because you're dealing with an electrical process, not a heat process. So once you start including all of these factors, a real engineering student would have these in a database and would be working with all of these factors to see what is better, what is ultimately the best scenario. But this week, my vote is for hydrogen. Not natural gas, but natural gas is very available. It's coming out of the ground all over the place. And so it's a very viable fuel. So I give them credit. Natural gas would be a very viable fuel. We know how to handle it. Building out the infrastructure would be one thing. But hydrogen has so much more energy. It has like three times the amount of energy per kilogram. But let me get back to the idea of pumping and pressurizing these gases. as it is stated, and this is a very realistic number, that if you take hydrogen or natural gas or whatever at room temperature, which is a gas, and you pressurize it up to the pressure that it would be in a tank, around 880 bar or 880 atmospheric pressures, that the amount of energy that it takes is 8 megajoules per kilogram. So that energy, then you would think, oh, well, you just subtract that off of the amount of energy that is available, like 53 megajoules per kilogram for natural gas. You say, oh, just subtract 8 from that. No, 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 buddy. How do you get that 8 megajoules of per kilogram of energy to pump that thing up? That's electricity. That's not just raw natural gas. That takes electricity. So how do you get 8 megajoules of electricity power? Or you would be measuring, of course, kilowatt. That's around 2.3 kilowatt hours of energy. But where do you get that from? You get that from about 5 times that in like burning natural gas to produce the electricity, because the efficiency of burning natural gas to convert to electricity is around 30%, the Carnot cycle. Okay, so now you take and you figure that out, it's about 27 megajoules per kilogram just to pressurize a kilogram of hydrogen or natural gas. So you have to subtract that in a real world. This is the real world, buddy. We're not living in fairy tale, glossy magazine, hyped up world. We're living in the real world. And so you have to subtract that 27 megajoules off the total. And what I was saying before is that's not such a big hit when you're dealing with hydrogen, 142 megajoules, but it's really a hit when you're dealing with natural gas at 53. That's 50% of it. 50% of your energy is going to pressurize it. And then look at something like hydrogen. It's hydrogen, the production of hydrogen is around 73%. So there you're getting another hit. To produce that 142 megajoules per kilogram of energy with hydrogen, it's taking about another 30% energy just to produce the hydrogen. Because you're getting, it's 73% efficient. That's the issue. So you have to take all of this into account, boys and girls, and the people in the glossy magazines ain't doing that. That's what they did. For example, I saw an article this week somebody sent me. It's a disinformation site called What's Up With That. It's called WATS, like WATTS. What's Up With That? And this is a disinformation site. Their goal, and what they try and do is they attack solar, they attack three-blade wind turbines, and their goal is to convince the public that this stuff doesn't work. And it's really true, it doesn't work. Three-blade wind turbines and solar do not work. They'll never power industrially or residentially in the United States. Neither of those technologies will ever work. And so this page concentrates on that. But what their final message is that, doggone it, we got to get back to that good old General Electric Central Power Company power. So they're clearly being handled by sponsors, General Electric, Siemens, Vesta, etc. Because what is their core business? GE and Siemens' central core business is providing equipment and maintenance to the central power companies with their big equipment. The wind stuff for GE and Siemens is just a small fraction of that. So I made a point in a blog note, which of course did not last. It was never placed on the page. I said, isn't it odd that, and in fact, why don't I just read that? I'll just read it on the air. This is the blog note that you cannot see online because the disinformation webpage, What's Up With That, wouldn't allow it out there. So I'll read it to you on my radio show. Okay, so just give me a second here. I'm going to pull this up. Okay, so this is what they wouldn't print. You got one thing wrong. This is to the author of this article. I didn't fill in all the blanks here. The article in this What's Up With That internet kind of rag paper disinformation site was talking about the Block Island facility off of Long Island Sound. It's a little island out there, just and the they put in these five big, ridiculous three-blade wind turbines, and they don't work. They've never worked. It's been a boondoggle, and they, every time they start doing more, they charge the poor people on this island more money. And, I mean, these people are just getting skewered. But, of course, the author's end result is clearly the implication that we have to get back to central power because these three-blade wind turbines offshore does not work. Well, and of course, that's part of the story. So here's my reply. I'll just read it verbatim the way I put it. And, of course, this was not allowed to be published. Here it is. You got one thing wrong. This is working exactly as planned. When GE and Siemens began selling alternative energy decades ago, guess what? If it succeeded, it would break their main core business, which is thousands of times larger, of selling equipment and maintenance to central power companies. Now, that does not make good business sense. Do you know who's the head of AWEA and CWEA, American Wind Energy Association and Canadian Wind Energy Association, and who lobbies Congress for green credits and subsidies, and who has divisive ad campaigns and backdoor lobbies to politicians to go green? Who gets you, the public, to subsidize the crap they sell because after decades it's still not profitable? Doggone it. It wouldn't be GE and Siemens, would it? You bet your flounder it is the same group. So, now we come to your article, which is 100% correct, although you have grossly overestimated the amount of energy these three-blade monsters are putting out. You have fallen into the trap set years ago by GE and Siemens and the higher-ups who have pushed the Green New Deal on mindless politicians who never ran a business, let alone a kid's Kool-Aid stand. The implication is that we got to get back to that good old reliable central power company power, because the crap these companies put out does not work by any stretch of the imagination. Do you really think that all the engineers at GE and Siemens are so stupid that they did not know that that they were selling blank, I won't say that word on here, that has no hope of working? Yep, like a flounder off the Block Island, you have swallowed this deception hook, line, and sinker. And your conclusion is exactly what they want you to conclude. Just on another note, have you ever seen all of the Looney Tune alternative energy projects that get press and funding? Alternative energy devices that will never solve the world energy problem. Do you think this is by mistake? Do you know that there are technologies that will solve the world energy problem? They're not hard to find unless you're looking at disinformation sites like What's Up With That. So, anyway, a little bit of sarcasm there from the professor. And, of course, they would not publish that because it calls them out for exactly what they're doing. They have a disinformation site that they take all of the information, which is correct. Three-blade wind turbines and solar don't work. And if you want examples and articles, you can write them till the cows come home, because there's every week a new story of somebody that got skewered by a solar company or got skewered by three-blade wind turbines or animals that are being killed or projects that are over cost and over budget and don't work. I mean, there's an endless supply. It's like political humorists. There's an endless supply of talking points. But their end result is, doggone, how about getting back to that good old GE nuclear power or Siemens or central power company power? That's the end result, and that's exactly the plan that was laid out decades ago when GE and Siemens got into this business. This is not a mistake. This is working, like I said, this is working exactly as planned. This is exactly what they wanted to do, to after they sucked all of the money out of the alternative energy business, after they got all the politicians to go green and Green New Deal and and to, you know, allocate trillions of dollars to put into this garbage. And after decades, they still can't run a profitable business out of these the crap they're selling the public or putting into installations. And then you have people like Warren Buffett that openly says, he said he's put in, he's this guy has put in more three-blade wind turbines than anybody alive or any company alive. And he openly admits, he says, this stuff doesn't work. He said, I'm only here for the subsidies. Here's a guy that doubled his, he went from $2 to $4 billion in 1 year because of government subsidies on three-blade wind turbines. And he laughs at it. He said, yeah, this stuff doesn't work. Yeah, I invested it in this. And then a year later, they sell it off to some other party who takes a tax deduction and probably gets other subsidies, some other green subsidies. This is a chain of custody that is, you know, would be criminal in any other world, but it's made legal by politicians who want them, they're just green. They're going to vote in greenness. Here's a funny story. The state of Hawaii has passed a mandate that by next year they have to be at a certain percentage of greenness, alternative energy. But they can't do it because the solar projects that they were trying to put in, can you imagine trying to put solar on Hawaii, on a big field where the plants and the grass and the trees grow up around it? You'd have to have 1,000 guys out there with chainsaws every day cutting everything down just to keep the solar panels from being overgrown. It's just ridiculous, you know. And then the three-blade wind turbines, they've tried them in Hawaii, more wind than you can imagine any place on the planet, and they've all failed. None of them are working. Yet they propose that all of their energy should come from alternative energy by political mandate. And since they can't do it, what they're doing is they're shutting down their coal fire plants and other, so now they're going to have to buy number two fuel oil from the mainland to power the island because they shut down power plants that wouldn't, that by law are being outlawed. I mean, it just, you don't give anything to a politician except maybe give them a shovel and a little bucket, send them off to the beach and let them play with the sand, make little sand castles. That's what you do with a politician. These people have never run a business. I mean, what has Ocasio-Cortez done in her life? Has she ever run a business? Does she know anything about business? Did she run a little Kool-Aid stand on the corner in Brooklyn at her high-level neighborhood when she was a little girl? No. I doubt it. And even if she did, anyway, I mean, or Biden or Kamala Harris, do you think these people ever ran a business? Do you think they know anything about it? No, they don't know anything. Yeah, they're running a country. They're running the most complex economic system country on the planet, and they don't know anything about business. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, no wonder everything is absolutely insane going down the tubes. Anyway, I'm getting off the subject here a little bit. But we have a big problem with engineers, too. In this article that I saw on liquid natural gas is a perfect example of engineers who, you know, and then they hand this off to some writer at a glossy magazine, and it's just, gee whiz, it's going to solve, and it, literally that's what they were saying. This is going to solve the world energy problem, liquid natural gas. Well, it's not like it's new. It's not like this is just came out of the rabbit hat. This is a technology that's old. And if it were that good, it would have proven itself a long time ago. As I said, the big issue is compressing it, getting it into a form. But that's what they're doing to transport it to China. Of course, you have to compress it to get it into tanks to fill that market, to take it to China where they're converting it into electricity. That's primarily what they're doing instead of buying coal, which is much harder to transport across the ocean. Coal is much more difficult. Coal is better suited to a land transportation mechanism. And if you want to see something, I think it's still on my webpage, I'm not sure quite where to find it. If not, I'll get it back up there. But it's a, I just happened to be, I was out traveling through, I think it was like Wyoming. It was out in the middle of the prairies, and I was driving along, and I came up over this bridge, which was running parallel to the railroad tracks. So I came up over the bridge, and just as I'm coming up over the bridge, there is a coal train running down. There's parallel tracks. So the coal train is running one direction, and here comes another empty coal train coming from the other direction. So I took my digital camera, my video recording camera, and I put it up on just the railing on the bridge. And the whole time I was there, nobody came by, and this road was no traffic at all. But I recorded this entire train passaging in both directions. Going in one direction, the train was full. There must have been 1,000 cars in this train. And then coming the other way was another train, empty. And these trains are going day and night to a facility to create electricity. And then I had some commentary that eight out of every 10 cars, that energy is totally wasted. And only two, by the time you get through with all the inefficiencies of delivery and everything else, only two of those 10 cars, or 20 out of 100, or 200 out of 1,000, are actually producing energy that gets used in electricity. It's horrific. And that's why I said I only have to produce 20% of the electricity that is produced through coal or natural gas or anything else with the wing generator, because 20% of that energy is going up in heat right into the atmosphere today. And of course, that's the big fallacy with the global climate change people, is they don't count that energy, which is direct heat energy going into the atmosphere right now. They ignore that. And that's billions of times greater, and it's immediate, is billions of times greater than any greenhouse effect ever would have. Okay, so anyway, I'm out of time here. I got about a minute left. Once again, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Click on the water filter link, the JMCC water filter. Go to the new homepage. Scroll down to the bottom and get your free 10-page pamphlet. Just put in your email address. It automatically sends it. So this is my brand new spanking webpage. And also, like I say, if you will try to order something over the past week and got rejected, go back now, because there was some snafus with the ordering page. That's all fixed. And the water filters. But I encourage people to look at the MR5 whole house water filter. And you taking a shower in this chemical soup, I mean, your health is at stake here. That's all I'm telling you. And I've got the product that will help you and your family have clean water in your entire house. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.